Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Test Talks, a podcast dedicated to all things test automation related. I'm your host, Joe, from joecolantonio.com. And today we're going to be speaking with Neil Sarayana-Rayana. Neil shares the steps he took to implement a successful large-scale automation effort for his company. But first, let's hear it for our awesome sponsor, Stoss Labs. Test Talks is sponsored by the fantastic folks at Stoss Labs, the cloud-based automated testing platform that eliminates the need to maintain your own Selenium grid and test infrastructure. Try it for free today. Visit testtalks.com and click on the Sign Up Now link under the homepage sponsor section. Hey, Neil. Welcome to Test Talks.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for letting me on.
Awesome. So it's great to have you on the show. But before we get started, can you just tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Sure. My name is Neil. I've been in software testing space for about a decade now, and I am very passionate about driving agility using automated testing. My experience crosses multiple domains. I've rendered testing and test automation services in networking and virtualization, healthcare, e-learning, and insurance. I am currently a full-time test manager working with Physicians Mutual based in Omaha, Nebraska. I am also a leader for Wibbit's Nebraska chapter, and that's an HP user group, so I get to drive some learning in town.
Awesome. So Neil, really wanted to have you on the show because I'm always curious to know how other automation engineers are implementing test automation at their companies. And it sounds like you've done a lot of cool things at Physician Mutual. So can you tell us a little bit about your current testing effort and what you've done there?
Absolutely, Joe. I could go on for hours talking about automation and our implementation. That's something I take a lot of pride about. Well, we first of all started off with a clean slate here at Physicians Mutual. We started off with a comprehensive tool evaluation about 3 years ago. We've considered the best of both open source and vendor-based. What's an appropriate licensing model that best fits our talent landscape? And then the testing group's mission was really to get enable quality and agile alignment. And I must add, our VP for enterprise architecture development is a strong proponent of engineering for testability. So I could not ask for a better foundation as we were getting started with our test automation adoption. Just to give you a brief overview of where we are at in terms of our maturity, first off, we started off engineering a robust framework using HP, and that was something we engineered ground up, HP UFT and Quality Center. So we got an opportunity to apply all our learning from other implementations and all that. I must add, HP's UFT itself was a great marketing move with an intent to provide a unified ID for both GUI and program interface testing. So we basically wanted to inherit the same concept, I should say, and apply that to our keyword or data-driven framework. We wanted to form that bridge between all the GUI functions and the API components. Might get technical here, but let me give you a sample use case. Typical insurance domain use case, let's say you want to connect to a database, fetch a value, and then invoke a web service using a token based on the value that you've fetched, and then navigate through a set of web pages, validate something on the web page, and then probably update a database. So as you see, it's all intertwined and it's a spider web and all in a single use case. Yep. So this is what we've accomplished using this framework, and this is really centric to our testing organization.
So there's a few things I really want to pull out of this that you mentioned. One was, which I really like, is that your manager or the VP is a big proponent of testability.
And absolutely.
I think that's key. Like you said, if you don't have that, it doesn't matter what tools you have in place or how many tests you have automated. If you don't have that testability, or the developers thinking about testability, I don't think you could be successful. I'm not sure. Have you seen that same thing on your end?
Absolutely. I certainly second that. One of the core agile tenets, as in the Agile Manifesto, is individuals and interactions over tools and processes. So this is more of a cultural adoption and a cultural change, not just in terms of the tools. No matter how many tools you change or how many tools you evaluate, I don't think you will get there unless you have that cultural change and the management buy-in. So I must say, so that has been a great win for us in terms of driving testability itself, where we get some of our developers to write in some test code. We have them engineer their programming production code in such a way that is conducive to testing. So all in to shift testing left.
Awesome. So another thing you brought up was your tool evaluation, and it's curious that you didn't pick an open source tool like Selenium. So I just want to know, what was your thinking behind that? I know you work for an insurance company, and they probably have a lot of different types of applications. So what made you choose HP over, say, Selenium?
Yeah, that's a great question. So after a comprehensive tool study, so what we realized was, although there are so many tools out there in the market, where it's vendor-based versus open source, we want to get a tool that best suits our needs. Number one was our agile project management tool. We have Rally in-house. So we wanted a solution that would really integrate and form a bridge between Rally and our test automation harness. Because Rally is really our repository for user stories, features, manual test cases, and all that. So how do we really build the traceability path from automation back to the user story and the feature? So an out-of-the-box integration between HP Quality Center and Rally gave that for us. In addition to that, okay, how long would it take for us to get a framework stood up? That was one factor that drove us to move towards HP. The other thing is building the skill and talent landscape. More importantly, what I would add is something that I wanted to avoid was getting clogged in managing and maintaining multiple frameworks. Mm. Now, Selenium is one tool that supports only browser-based. So we do have, when you take an end-to-end workflow, the example I gave you, you're talking about databases, web services, and some native desktop application. So we didn't want to end up in maintaining multiple frameworks and kind of stack them up one after the other. So we wanted one unified solution that would give us the biggest bang for our buck, and that was a move for HP.
Awesome. And I like how you went in that evaluation unbiased. A lot of people try to use the latest tools or what they think is the hippest tool. And I went through the same thing. I started a new project, and it was supposed to be all new HTML5 development. And we decided to go with Selenium, and that's great, with BDD. But over time, we started to have to realize we have to integrate with these older technologies. And lo and behold, we can't do it because Selenium doesn't handle it. We have to do all these weird things like with Sikuli to try to handle it. So I like how you said you have all these other applications. You wanted to have just one framework, and that's one of the main reasons why you chose that particular tool set.
That's true. Hey, probably LeanFT is a solution to all that. But yeah, that's a move from HP right now.
That was my next question. I've had an early evaluation of LeanFT. I've used it for a few things. I'm going to do a little proof of concept against our application, see how it works. Have you tried LeanFT, or do you think that's a direction your company would go? Are you pleased with what you have so far?
Frankly, we are pleased with what we have so far, but that's not to say that we would stop exploring. We do have the version downloaded. It's the version 12.5, and that's something we are evaluating at this point, but that's certainly on the roadmap.
So, Neil, a lot of companies are different. A lot of teams are different. I know in my team, the teams I work with, they have a lot of sprint teams with a lot of developers, not so many testers. So that's another reason why we chose a tool like Selenium, because we can use the same programming language that the developers are using, like Java. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious to know, in your company, how are the groups set up? Do you have an automation group, and then they're the ones that handle the automation? Or do you have people on sprint teams? How does that work?
Yeah, so the way our talent landscape is structured is all of our testing resources from the test practice are embedded within the project teams. So we have about 12 project teams. So they are part of the daily agile ceremonies. They're responsible for the automation within the iteration and also for the regression automation as we go along. So we do not have a shared services team or a team that provides independent services and validation. Yeah, and me, myself, as a practice leader and a test manager, so part of my responsibility is driving the designs and giving that direction in terms of test automation and the technical insight for the team.
Yeah, so that's a great point. So how do you handle all these different teams with automation? Because I know one team might do automation one way, and your team may do something another way. So how are you keeping things consistent? How are you driving that effort across the teams?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we addressed this right from the get-go, when we started with the framework design and we deployed it for the enterprise. So framework is really a rule book. So what we said was every team using automation really needs to join the buzz and join the party and pretty much adopt this framework. We do not want each of the project teams defining their own standards, defining their own guidelines. So we started off with defining a set of operating procedures for everybody to use. And the framework itself, it offers that repeatability aspect for the team so that they don't have to re-engineer the same code again and again. So we have a set of common library functions, support library functions. So this really has been helping us keep everything centralized.
Cool. So it sounds like your framework is written in such a way that it's readable and that it's broken out in logical sections that when a new team comes on board, it makes sense maybe the way you have it laid out, what's what and what to use and what's already there.
Exactly. So reusability was a key for us. So the driver functions and the support and the common functions that we've engineered, that is the core and that's the center for everybody using this framework. So all the testers in the enterprise using it, they pretty much use the same libraries. And we've also done a lot of performance tuning to ensure that doesn't give us any problems as we go along.
Cool. So are you using any version control within LM for QTP, UFT? That's one reason why we didn't use UFT also, is we needed version control and we couldn't turn it on in LM for every project. So are you using any sort of version control for your efforts?
We are using the inbuilt version control in Quality Center itself, but I might add, we maintain only one active production project within Quality Center. So I think that is where we got out without needing a full-blown version control tool. And the reason we are maintaining a single production automation project is because we did not want to duplicate the common libraries and the support libraries for every project team. Again, that is redundancy in code. So the driver scripts, the init scripts, and the core of the framework itself, we did not want to duplicate. So instead, what we did was maintain one production project and define a structure for the folder itself within test plan and test resources and bake that into the framework rules. So that way, we still get to use some flexibility in terms of versioning and the files getting locked when one person is actively modifying that within Quality Center. And I think, yeah, that's how we operate at this point.
Cool. So you also mentioned you have integration with Rally. Are there any sort of reports or metrics that you use for automation to see how your automation efforts are going that you use often that you find helpful?
Most of our reports are automated and those are generated from Quality Center itself. And that, again, is not a part of this harness that is the bridge between Rally and Quality Center. But we do have some API coding done for Rally itself that reports off of Rally's test sets. So that really was the key for us to build the bridge. So take an example. We have a test set maintained in Rally, and that has a mix of both manual and automated tests. So once we run the automation using Quality Center and UFT, so those results are pushed over to Rally. So you have the unified results, all of them tied in that single test set. And we have a code, basically what we've developed for a dashboard. It's a wiki that pulls the results from all these test sets per release and per iteration, and then we start reporting all that. So we get to report our regression system testing reports, project system testing reports, and all this is from Rally API.
So Neil, I also want to explore a little bit more of the API testing piece. I actually wrote a book on UFT API, but I'm not sure, I don't know many companies that actually use UFT API with UFT, the GUI piece. So it sounds like you use both. I get this question all the time, like how do I create a framework for my UFT API test? Are you creating reusable methods or calls to web services that you reuse in your workflow? How does that work?
Well, Joe, before I answer that, I got to thank you for your book and for your blog post. That was really helpful. And as a matter of fact, we got some of the books for training some of our engineers on the team.
Awesome, cool.
That has been our manifesto for us. apparently, I think that was the only help available on the website.
Yeah.
So we've adapted to that. And thanks to some of the skill that we had on the team, we really integrated our API module also as a part of the framework. Like I told you, database component, UI component, and the API, all these three are integrated within the single framework. So you really have an end-to-end business flow with keywords. So your first keyword could be an API call. Second keyword could be a bunch of UI operations. And the third keyword could be really a database push or a fetch.
Do you have any tips or tricks to fight off tests being unreliable or flaky? Any tips on how to make your tests more reliable?
Tips or tricks to really make our UFT scripts robust and ensure that they're not brittle it would be how you engineer your library of common functions. Some of the common functions that you can think of: set value, get value, file manipulation operation. So if you leave that code for at the perusal of each of the teams and each of the engineers, they tend to write those functions in their own way. So rather, the approach we took was we rather define the library and bake it in as a part of the framework and then register those user functions. So essentially, for the engineers using the framework, they are built-in functions. So that minimizes the chances of failures as we go along. So we don't have to constantly end up debugging, and especially when you leave the scripts for an overwrite run for continuous integration, you don't really have to deal with all that stuff.
So you bring up continuous integration. It sounds like, are you able to integrate your framework within a CI system? What CI system are you using?
Oh, absolutely. So speaking of CI, so we have, what we've done is really we've used OTA, Quality Center's OTA, to develop a CI framework ground up to meet the modern automation demands of continuous testing and integration. So now that's a framework that we've engineered ground up again. No use of open source tools or commercial tools. Everything coded ground up using QC, OTA, and Java. So what we've done is BuildForge is really our build deployment, code deployment tool. So our intent was after every build deployment, we wanted to really execute our automation on a specific cadence, on a nightly basis and on a weekly basis. So this is a bridge that we've built between BuildForge and Quality Center. And this is using QC's OTA. This framework has the intelligence to create test sets at runtime in Quality Center, and that's all using OTA, and also execute them. And we also have the concept of multi-threading. So let's say you want to execute it on two different test environments concurrently overnight, and that's also possible. And then we separate the reports also for the email reports that get generated. They are reported by the test set and by the environment. In addition to that, we've also added some load balancing because all of our execution is virtualized on a set of VM pool. So we get the best the feature of load balancing also within Quality Center. So we're not waiting on a specific VM or so. Each as and when a VM is available, that's available for execution.
Awesome. So I guess I'm curious to know, for the people that don't know, OTA is like it's an API that you can use to do things within ALM that doesn't happen out of the box. So it sounds like you created some custom code within Java that interacts with that API that you could then do things within ALM behind the scenes programmatically. But I found in my experience, it's not very well documented and it's kind of hard to understand. So any tips around that, or do you have any sites that you use as a resource for OTA?
Sure. I would say it's joecolantonio.com. Well, I should admit that was the only source of information for us on OTA. However, and then we've built it on top of it. So that was really a great start for us to even explore and then further dig into the API documentation from HP. Yeah. So we built it brick by brick.
Awesome. I don't know if you know this, but I used to work at an insurance company called One Beacon Insurance for almost 6 years. And I'll be honest, it was one of the most rewarding companies or places to work with. I don't know why for an insurance company it was mid-sized, but I was able to do everything. And it's different. I work for a large company now and it's great, but it's like very narrow where with the insurance company, I was able to work on all kinds of projects. So a lot of people, I don't know if they realize, a lot of times insurance is cutting edge. So is there anything on your roadmap that you see for new technologies or improvements to your framework that you plan on working on in the coming year?
Yeah, certainly. I think the way at which the rate at which the technology is evolving, even more so faster than the rate at which the customers' needs are evolving, I think we need to stay ahead of the competition. So that's something we constantly monitor and see if we're actually on par in terms of our technology adoption. Are we getting the biggest bang for our buck? Are we getting the value on investment in addition to the return on investment? So along those lines, from the test practice itself, like I said, LeanFT is something that we are interested to explore and see what the capabilities are that it can offer at an enterprise level. But in addition to that, yeah, and like I said, I'm a leader for Vivid's Nebraska chapter. So there's a constant synergy going on there also in terms of discussing mobility, the latest trends in performance, and how do we really integrate all these solutions together. When you talk about so many tools and so many frameworks, you're not only talking about using a lot of data, but you're generating a lot of data. So how is this, how is all of this managed, and how is this managed in a centralized way that it is efficient for our business partners? So we always keep an eye out for that.
Great. What are the benefits you've seen out of your automation framework so far? Has it found real issues in production or before something got to production? Can you give us any examples of how it actually caught something before it was released to a customer?
This is something that I'm constantly challenged with in terms of generating metrics with automation adoption and how we are evolving over time. I would say the biggest benefit that we've seen over the years is safety net and increased test coverage. We couldn't just dream of getting this amount of coverage and automated execution without this framework or this adoption of this technology. We feel over a 3-year span, automated testing within the company has democratized to a point where the project teams have graduated to loving test automation from needing and choosing test automation. We have seen teams adopt this technology not just for business work requests with formal test cases and rally and stuff like that, but also for any activity that can sensibly be automated and save some time. So I think this has been a cultural change in a positive way.
Awesome. So I just want to touch one more time on the testability piece, because I think that's such a key thing to automation. Is there anything you did specifically or told developers specifically what you needed in order for you to be able to automate their code that they follow now, or any tips you can give for other people when working with developers to encourage them to say, hey, look, we need to make it testable, and here's why, here's the benefit to you?
Well, I feel it's about open dialogue and tremendous collaboration between the development teams and the test practice and the testers, and now the dev testers, if you really want to call it that persona. And this is something that needs to be driven from the management itself. So one sample project that we had was, if I can take an example, it's called Application Entry Framework. So the way the development teams and the development architecture was engineered itself was conducive for us to build a framework so that we don't really wait for automating that. You don't traditionally wait for the UI to be completely developed and big, and then you start automating it toward the end of the iteration or probably toward the end of your release cadence. So due to the development engineering marvel, we were able to actually automate it as we go alongside development, and that gave us the benefit of time to market. We were able to release few products to production completely tested using automation scripts and giving us that benefit of time to market. I think the key here is collaboration with the dev teams and keeping the dialogue open in terms of technical design reviews and engineering it in such a way that you think about testability as you start thinking about the design. Testing is not an afterthought anymore. You got to think about it as you start designing the work request, as you start thinking about the architecture in order to shift testing left.
Great point. And I definitely agree with you. I love how it may seem common sense, but collaboration is really key. And a lot of teams have dysfunction. So it's good to know that there's companies out there that are actually implementing automation, they're having these conversations, and it sounds like it's working. So that's awesome.
Exactly. I mean, it is said that it's customer collaboration over contract negotiation. I think it's collaboration at any level and any scale. It's not just with the product owners. It's with the developers. It's with the Scrum team as a whole. So collaboration is the key there.
Awesome. So is there one thing you see over and over in your experience that you think most people trying to implement an automation framework are doing wrong?
I would probably add it starts off with defining your business outcomes. Mm-hmm. I think more so than adopting a technology or a tool, it's about defining your business outcomes and your problems. And then you're not going to solve all of them in a single day or in a single quarter. You got to build a roadmap. So you got to build a roadmap and tackle them quarter by quarter, year by year. And it's all about how we fundamentally enable and embrace a rich set of experiences using the technologies for the business units more efficiently, more agilely, all in a simpler way.
Excellent. Are there any books or resources you recommend for someone trying to get up speed with testing or automation?
Well, I recommend your book, certainly the book on API testing, and that has been a manifesto for us as well. In addition to that, I found some online resources and blogs really helpful. One of it is Knowledge Inbox, mm-hmm. and another book by Tarun Lalwani. I found that to be really good in terms of giving some practical examples and real-world examples on automation and coding best practices.
Awesome. Yeah, great resources. We had Torin, I think, in episode 10. He's a great, great guy. I love his book, so he has great resources. So
I recall that. I've been reading all through all the posts in the SQA forums for over 7 years now.
Yep. Yeah, he's a leader of, I guess, the group in SQA, so he's really helpful there, too.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, Neil, before we go, is there one piece of actionable advice you can give someone to improve their automation testing efforts? And let us know the best way to find or contact you.
The best piece of advice I can give is automation is not a silver bullet, but at the same time, be cautious and cognizant of what you want to automate and focus on value on investment rather than just return on investment. So the best way to contact me will be my LinkedIn profile. So I'm always on social media. I keep checking my inboxes.
Thank you, Neil, for your automation awesomeness. For links to everything of value that we talked about in this episode, head on over to testtalks.com/76. And while you're there, make sure to click on the Sign Up Now link under the exclusive sponsor section to learn all about Sauce Labs' awesome products and services. And if you could do me a favor, if you have a second, why not go ahead and rate and review Test Talks in iTunes? Ratings and reviews go a long way in ranking the show in iTunes and also in terms of exposure and helping new people come along and see that this show is worthwhile. And if this episode has helped you in any way, why not share it with a friend or coworker? And together, we can help spread automation awesomeness to the masses. So that's it for this episode of Test Talks. I'm Joe, and my mission is to help you succeed with test automation awesomeness. As always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.